This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the year.
Well, we've got the measles, not us, yeah. Not Amy Marks Kors, yeah. Not Chris Ranji, but we do know there is at least one case in St. Louis, and that's not good as it has spread around the country over the last several months. And to discuss that with us and what happens moving forward, Candace DeMatteis is the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Partnership to Fight Infectious Disease and is with us now on KMOX. We appreciate you being with us today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So what do we know about this first case, how it got here? We know it came from Illinois, but what do we know about that person in particular and where they may have gotten it?
Well, it's hard to trace exactly where measles, you know, the exposure, but the reality is if you're not immune, if you haven't had it as a child or been exposed in your lifetime or been vaccinated against it, you are very highly likely to get measles in a room full of unvaccinated people, say 10 people who are unvaccinated or otherwise not immune. Someone walks in with measles, 9 out of those 10 people will get measles. That's how infectious it is. So sometimes it's a little hard to pinpoint. We've seen cases come in from people visiting other countries, people visiting other parts of the U.S. where measles is more prevalent, and then bringing it back home, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think we know now that the person was an adult, because I know there has been so much focus on the outbreak among children, especially in Texas. So I guess my first question will be, I know I got a measles vaccine. I'm 41, but I heard that the vaccine changed in the 60s or something. And so if you're older, do you need to get revaccinated?
It really depends. There was a change in the vaccine. When I got vaccinated, I was born in the 60s, I got one shot against measles, mumps, and rubella. And that vaccine has then changed now. It is much more effective. So two shots are now the norm, and it's 97% effective in terms of preventing you from getting measles. There are tests that adults can get just to test the level of antibodies you have if you have a question. We just advise people to talk to your healthcare provider if you have any concerns about that, and they can let you know if it's a good idea to get a booster. They can test your antibodies levels and make that determination, or just maybe recommend getting a booster just to be safe.
Okay, so then just to clarify, let's say if you're born in the 60s, you would recommend talking to your healthcare provider. If you're born in the 70s, the 80s, or 90s, you're probably okay with your vaccine.
You should be, assuming you were vaccinated as a child. Of course, there's that initial question, were you vaccinated at all? So
what's interesting,
and I think I think that it was, the cutoff period is a little earlier than the 60s, but again, talk to your healthcare provider and they can certainly let you know.
I know that, and we're going to talk about this in a moment, because apparently the vast majority of people are on board with still getting vaccinated for things like this. But there has been this growing anti-vaccine sentiment since COVID happened, as you are well aware of that. How much of that has affected the measles vaccine in particular?
It's a great question. And the measles vaccine has been the subject of a lot of misinformation that has helped to, you know, raise skepticism, raise doubts. And candidly, we haven't seen, other than, you know, this year and more recent outbreaks, measles is something we don't really think about or talk about because the vaccine has been so effective in eliminating it. So when you're looking at, well, should I vaccinate? Should I not? Measles, who gets measles these days? Those types of, you know, considerations come into play. We do know that in Missouri, for example, the statewide vaccination rate for measles is at 90% right now. Public health experts, infectious disease experts would recommend that that level be at 95% to really prevent the types of outbreaks that we're seeing in other parts of the country. So we do have some work to do there. And unfortunately, there is a lot of misinformation, particularly about this, the MMR vaccine. But there are a number of others. We're seeing whooping cough making a comeback, and that's the vaccine. Pertussis is the disease. Had some babies die in Louisiana this year from a vaccine-preventable disease of whooping cough. So it's measles in some way is the canary in the coal mine. It's so highly infectious, but many worry that this is just the first outbreak of many potentially vaccine-preventable diseases if we don't get those vaccination rates back where they need to be.
Just to make this clear, what's happening now is highly unusual, correct? Or is it a thing that, well, there have been measles cases, it's just that we never hear about it, but now we're hypersensitive to it?
No, there have been changes. I mean, many people have been warning for a number of years about the drop-off in vaccination rates, and it's creating this situation where for 25 years, we have had a status of eradication of measles in the U.S., that we got that in 2000. We are at significant risk of losing that eradication status. If measles spreads and continues throughout the U.S. for a year, 12-month period, we will lose that status. So it is unusual, and we are at a tipping point in terms of vaccine-preventable illnesses and being able to avoid the, you know, the burden of disease that can be preventable through vaccines.
Yeah, I can imagine how frustrating that is. I know that Missouri had a second case of measles in New Madrid County, unrelated to the person that we saw here in the city of St. Louis. So when you see one case pop up, what is your reaction? Like, oh, like this is inevitably the beginning of an outbreak, or is there hope that it can be contained?
No, there's absolutely hope that it can be contained. When you will have, especially when people travel to other countries, for example, where measles is endemic, you may have people come back. So you may have a case here and there. An outbreak is where you have cases related to that initial person getting measles, and then it starts to spread and you can tie it back to that, you know, initial case, if you will. And that's what we're seeing in West Texas, where that, you know, it started with one case, but it has spread dramatically. And so that's really the concern, is can we get control? Can we identify where the exposure were so people can be aware, so they can quarantine, so they can, you know, avoid people in the community who may be exposed? There's still an opportunity to get vaccinated even after you've been exposed for a couple of days, where the vaccination can help, you know, either make the disease lesser or maybe avoid it altogether. So there are opportunities, but you got to intervene quickly and get a handle on it quickly.
Public Opinion Strategies and Lake Research did a bipartisan poll. They conducted one asking people about vaccines, and it's still 3/4 of American voters think the United States should prioritize, you know, ensuring that the FDA approved vaccines are available to everybody. It almost feels like in this environment, it's 50-50, like some people are on board and, you know, like half the people are on board and half aren't. So for people who are still skeptical about this, because one thing you heard a lot from COVID or during COVID was, well, the vaccine's out here, but people are still getting it. People are still getting sick. So why should I trust anything? For people who still have those doubts, what would you say to them?
Well, a couple of things. One is that vaccines are different for different diseases. COVID, coronaviruses mutate very quickly. So, and influenza viruses. Some people, you know, may, well, the flu vaccine's not, you know, I got vaccinated, I got the flu, those, or I never get vaccinated and I don't get the flu. So there are people that compare and make these generalizations, but you need to look at each vaccine specifically and the protective effects. MMR vaccine is 97% effective against measles. So that's very, and I mean, from getting measles. So that's one thing, is that you have to make sure you understand, you know, for these specific illness, what's the vaccine, what's the effectiveness rate, and then talk to your healthcare provider. We are inundated with information from all kinds of sources that are not science-based or medical-based, and talk to your personal healthcare provider. They know you, they know what your risks are, and they can provide the best advice for what you should do.
Candace DeMatteis, the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Partnership to Fight Infectious Disease. We appreciate your time, but we do need to break in. We have a little bit of news here, Amy.
Breaking news.
Yes, we have breaking news.
There is white smoke coming out of the chimney at the Vatican. They have a new pope. They did it.
Yep. The winner secured at least 89 votes. That's what we know. This is a report from CBS of the 133 cardinals participating in the conclave to elect a successor to Pope Francis. The crowd in St. Peter's Square erupted in cheers, we were told.
I was watching a little bit of it. It is. They are not joking when they talk about the crowd that is there. Absolutely massive. The smoke turned white and... yeah, people erupted. Now, CBS News, too, we have their coverage at 11:20.
Yep.
And so, our religion editor, Fred Bottomer, has just popped into Studio B.
So what
hey, guys.
Know, Fred?
Hey,
Fred.
So here we are, right? So, we think it's the fourth vote. It's definitely the second day, and that's the same day that Pope Francis and Pope Benedict were elected. So that seems like we're right in this ballpark, you know, for when the cardinals could agree on a choice. Some people are saying that if it happens on the fourth vote, it's probably one of the leading contenders going in that might have been chosen. So lots of stuff going on. I don't think they're going to appear on the balcony for about another 40 minutes or so. A lot that happens now, you know, once a pope is chosen, the senior cardinal in the conclave goes up to the pope, the new pope, and says, "Do you accept the job?" And obviously, almost always, they say yes. Back in the 1200s, one pope
no, I'm good.
Ran and hid until another pope was chosen.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
wow.
But that was,
but
you know, hundreds of years ago since someone turned down the job. So there were 133 elector cardinals. Two-thirds majority vote was reached, so that's at least 89 votes. 80% of the cardinals were nominated by Pope Francis. That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that he stacked the deck, but a lot of these cardinals are younger cardinals, and it's their first, you know, for 80% of them, it was their first conclave. So after the Pope, the new Pope says, yes, you know, I accept the nomination, they go and start fitting him for his robe. They've got three robes, one for each size. They put a robe onto him, and then he goes into what's called the Room of Tears. And at that point, a lot of the new popes emotionally break down, knowing the weight of the job that they've just been handed. Then once they come out onto the balcony, the proto-deacon at the Vatican, which is a fancy name, he comes out and introduces the new pope. He'll call him by his birth name and then say that in Italian, then announce him in the name that he chose for Pope. I think Pope John is the most popular name that's been chosen down through history. And then that the new Pope will come out on the balcony, and he will offer a blessing to everyone that's in the crowd at St. Peter's Square. Yesterday, it was like 250,000 people that were there.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how many there are there today.
That, I mean, it looked massive.
I know. So it's kind of interesting. When Pope Francis came out, he kind of shocked the crowd by just saying Buenos Aires, which I think is good afternoon. And then he asked the crowd to pray for him and bless him, which was flipping the whole of how things go.
Hey, Fred, what you just told us, that process,
again,
how long is that from the smoke to the new pope being
on the
balcony?
I imagine it's going to be 40 minutes, because that's when they'll be on the balcony, they said. Expect it to be revealed within 40 minutes to an hour.
I didn't know you meant the Pope would actually be on the balcony in 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. They'll bring him out and introduce him to everyone.
Oh my gosh. I was thinking like the mayor, like you have 2 weeks to get your robe.
No. So the instant that the new Pope says, I accept,
yeah,
is when he becomes Pope.
Wow.
Okay.
There's
an installation, yep, though, an official installation ceremony, probably about a week from now, inside at St. Peter's Square. And I think they hope to hold those outside because of the crowds. So that's going to be coming up, probably the official installation, in about a week. But from the moment he says, I accept, it's when he becomes the new Pope.
We're about 90 seconds away, wow, from CBS special coverage, and we are going to get to that and see what they can tell us. So this whole process, Fred, of getting the robe, like they start this immediately? Were they fit him for that? They do it right away?
I think it's a pretty quick job. Yeah, well, they don't even have to fit him. They just, you know, you've got three robes. You're large, okay, medium, or small. And then you go out there.
Like one size fits all. That's, yeah, what the tag says. No, but right, there is a story of the special tailor, Rennero Mancinelli, I think that's how you say it,
yeah,
very close to St. Peter's Basilica. He's the man who dresses popes. And,
right,
and it's this old tailor shop. And he makes the robes and in this tiny little shop in,
yeah,
Italy.
It's pretty cool that he does that. And I imagine, you know, the robe that we're going to see, you know, in 40 minutes, mm-hmm, is probably not the robe that you're going to see a week from now.
Okay.
You know, I mean, yeah, that's just the, you know, let's get you out there. So put that on you.
Do they?
And they put all the other things on him.
So like the hat.
And it'll be interesting to see what he wears when he comes out.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if Pope Benedict wore a lot of royal red sort of things. Mm-hmm. Pope Francis came out in pretty much all white, sort of the simple, basic, you know, toned down appearance.
So the celebration is happening, wow, at St. Peter's Square right now as a new pope has been elected. We do not know yet who it is. Fred Bottomer, our religion editor here at KMOX, we appreciate you stepping in.
Thanks.
So let's step away for CBS coverage.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris and Amy's show on 104.1 FM KMOX. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji. Looks like we have a new pope. We don't know who it is yet, but white smoke has come out of the chimney at the Sistine Chapel, and we are now waiting for an official announcement of who it is. The eyes are on the balcony right now. We do have our editor, our religion editor, Fred Bottomer, who is with us in studio. We're going to see if there is a CBS special report. We are expecting that now. And we do not have it. We do not have access to it, but we do have Fred. We have access to him. So at least
I'm right here.
So again, we're waiting, but we do expect to shortly know who the new pope is and who's been elected. Who are the possible candidates here, Fred?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Some of the leading candidates one is an Italian cardinal, Pietro Parolin. He's 70 years old. He's the current Secretary of State at the Vatican. And he's a Pope Francis ally who would continue Francis's progressive policies. Some people said his zenith was falling a little bit because he gave a homily that they thought was a little lackluster during the lead up to the conclave, thinking, well, maybe this isn't the guy that's going to excite the church and the followers. But he was the favorite going in. A lot, you know, you could place bets. He was the betting favorite. He's the one that a lot of people think would be the choice, and he would continue the way that Pope Francis has been doing things. And they say that he's very, very diplomatic, and he may do kind of the same things, but in a little bit softer way. There's a conservative choice possibility, Peter Erdo, who is the Cardinal of Budapest. He's 72 years old. He's a strong conservative voice, and he'd restore what they call doctrinal authority and reverse many of Francis's changes. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a middle ground, Pier Battista Pizzaballa, which I think is kind of the funnest
name of all of them.
He's the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, which means he's in charge of all of the holy sites in Israel and the areas around there. He's 60 years old. He's from Italy as well. 60 is kind of a young age.
Seems young, yeah.
For a pope. I think that the age in the past they like to hit is mid-70s. That way you're assured not too long of the papacy. Mm-hmm. Pope Benedict was 78 when he was elected. Pope Francis was 76 when he was elected. So you've got that age possibility. There's also a Philippine cardinal who's a very...
Asian Francis?
The Asian Francis, yes. Luis Antonio Tagle. He's young as well. He's 67, and he works at the Vatican now. He heads the Vatican's Missionary of Evangelization. So, I mean, he's very, very charismatic as well. You've seen him just lately. He was on video singing Imagine by John Lennon. Oh, and everybody says, oh, this guy touched the people. But he's young, and he's an Asian possibility. A lot of people say he's not a very good administrator, so that might be holding him back. But we'll see.
Any Americans possible here?
Well, you know, they always say there's never going to be an American, or it's highly unlikely that American would ever be elected pope. But in this case, there are some choices that they say, you know, if there's going to be an American pope, these couple of people are front runners. I like Timothy Dolan just because, you know, we all know him from a St. Louis native, New York cardinal, very charismatic, very gregarious. Some people say he's too American. He's so simply spoken and just says it. He's a strong conservative as well. So, you know, that's his doctrinal position. There's also Cardinal Robert Prevost. He's 69 years old. Timothy Dolan is 75. So he's in that age range.
Right.
Robert Prevost is 69. He was born in Chicago. He's at the Vatican now. He's in charge of the committee of the bishops that names new bishops. So like all these bishops, if you're going to be appointed, go through him. So he knows a lot of people. He's a curial insider. So he's an insider. He's got a lot of global experience. He worked in Peru. And so he's got, you know, both the pastoral experience, the worldwide experience. So his is the name. And then there's also the favorite of the traditionalist sect of the church, you know, the very conservatives, and that would be former St. Louis Archbishop Cardinal Raymond Burke. He's 76 years old, and he's the former head of the Supreme Tribunal at the Vatican. And a lot of people think, though, he might be more likely to be sort of a deal maker with the conservatives. A lot of conservatives will come to him and ask, you know, who should we throw, you know, our vote behind, and he would be the one that they would ask.
Robert is watching us on YouTube and wants to know about John Paul II and how old he was, because it felt like he was pope for a really long time.
John Paul II was pope for 26 years. That's the third longest time. Yeah.
So I do know this. He was 58,
is that right?
Which was the youngest pope in 100 years.
He was 58 in 1978.
Yeah.
And like we said earlier, Pope Francis was 76, Pope Benedict was 78.
Because 58 sounds really young now.
Super young, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it came right after the death of, after 33 days of Pope John Paul I. So I think a lot of the cardinals were like, ooh, we don't want this to happen again. Let's go with a younger pope. Hmm.
Fred Bottomer, our religious editor here at 104.1 FM KMOX. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji will continue our coverage of the new pope. And we are still waiting to find out who it is. But we do know that one has been elected. This is KMOX. Well, speaking of cardinals, they've done it. They have chosen a new pope.
Yep.
Right now, the we're still waiting to find out who it is, who the person selected, who that's going to be. We do have our religion editor, Fred Bottomer, in studio with us right now on 104.1 FM. So this was a quick decision, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so. I think nobody expected it to be on the first day because, you know, you just want to get in there. Mm-hmm. Cardinals take their vote and they see you know, what likelihoods are, what you know, who's got the biggest lead. And then they spend the next night and morning maybe talking amongst themselves, seeing, you know, what do we do to try and get a majority for the person we like.
How much insight do you have into that process, as far as, I'm sure there's quote unquote politics involved within, like with all the Cardinals going, okay, let's get us together and we vote for this guy and don't vote for that guy. And
yeah, well, I did watch Conclave, the movie.
Okay.
I've not seen it yet.
So don't hold that against
okay.
me. But I heard yesterday on a television interview with the former ambassador to the Vatican from the United States. And he said that he heard an older cardinal, mm-hmm. cardinal who can't vote anymore, was telling some of the current cardinals before they went into the conclave, sometimes it's more important to look at who you don't want to be pope. Mm-hmm. And if you see a trend going in the way that you don't want it to go, then you all need to coalesce around someone that you'd rather have, which made it sound very political. And I'm sure the cardinals will say, no, it's much more spiritual. But from a cardinal who can no longer vote, he said it is political.
Is it possible Donald Trump's the new pope? Is it?
You know, no.
Okay.
So, okay. This, right. And you can tell me from your experience, Fred, right. or from Conclave. You kind of hinted towards it, but if you are a group of cardinals and you're like, we don't want that guy, is it because of theological differences, which obviously exist? There are more conservative cardinals and more progressive cardinals. Or is it like you said, spiritual in the sense that we don't think he doesn't have the pope vibe?
I don't know. I think it would be all the same. I think it's just the future direction of the church. Yeah. Which way do you want the church to go? You know, do you? They've always said you follow a fat pope with a skinny pope.
Well,
so, you know, things go back and forth.
It's hard to tell.
You know,
under
with
the
Pope
robes.
Francis, there are some in the church who said it just got a little bit too far left.
Yeah.
And time
yeah.
to pull in the reins a little bit, move it back toward the center. And there are others that are saying, no, we need to stay in as far left as it
possible.
Has become.
Okay. So, an honest question, Francis was a Jesuit, correct?
Yes.
Yes. So is it sometimes, well, you don't want to follow one Jesuit pope with another Jesuit pope?
Yeah, I think
pope?
I think I actually read that as well. Someone said it's not likely to have another Jesuit pope. You look at the current body, the current College of Cardinals, 133 elector cardinals. That means everyone that was in there was under the age of 80. And 80% of them, as I said, were appointed by Pope Francis. So that's mm-hmm. 108 cardinals that he elected. Cardinal Dolan and Cardinal Burke were both appointed by Pope Benedict.
Mm-hmm.
Now the cardinals that were voting represented more than 70 countries. When Pope Francis was elected in 2013, 48 countries were represented. So this new College of Cardinals has many more cardinals from countries that never had cardinals before or a say in the election of a next pope. And not all of them, you'd think maybe if Pope Francis appointed them, they'd line up with his view. Not necessarily the case, because a lot of these cardinals come from some of the most conservative parts, from Africa, where things, mm-hmm. you know, they're very conservative when it comes to some of the sexuality issues in the church. So you just don't know what direction this body is going to go. And some of these cardinals don't even speak Italian, which is the main language of the Vatican. So their communication is in question with the other cardinals. You know, how well can they all communicate with each other? But apparently they communicated enough to get it done in maybe four votes.
And we haven't had a pope from Asia or Africa yet, correct?
No. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, the last, you know, three, I mean, Pope John Paul II, Poland, mm-hmm. Pope Benedict, Germany, Pope Francis, Argentina, even though he was an Italian native. So we'll see.
Fred Bottomer, religion editor here at KMOX, is with us. And Amy, have you noticed? So we used to give Fred a hard time for all of the folders that used to be in the office. They were all over the station.
Yeah.
Fred
has. They still are.
I haven't seen them in a while, so I don't know what you've done with them.
Yeah. He stashes them in random drawers.
Fred has right here a folder that is 20 years old. This is from the last time this happened.
The time before. This was
the time before.
2005
time before.
Conclave. After the death of Pope John Paul II, And so those are just my notes that I put together. That I could, sort of my cheat sheet.
How did you find the folder?
Yeah, I don't know how
like
we did
they're
this.
All over the station.
Yeah, I.
Yeah, you're like, where's my know. Pope folder? It's one. There are literally 7 million Manila folders.
Well, just one for every day since
wow.
I've been here for 43 years.
It is incredible.
That's insane. And he found his Pope folder.
Fred's yeah. awesome. Fred Bottomer, religion editor here at KMOX. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji, awaiting the announcement of who the new Pope is. But one has been selected. We know that for a fact. It is the Chris and Amy Show, and we will come back with more coverage on this on 104.1 FM KMOX. We have a new Pope. Don't know who it is yet.
Can I just say?
Yep.
In the past hour, you have started a segment with, we've got the measles.
And
we have a
Pope.
New Pope. Mm-hmm. It's been a big day.
It really has.
And that's why our health and religion editor,
oh.
Fred Bottomer, the expert on measles and popes,
so,
is here.
So let's just review where we are right now, okay?
Yes.
So around 11:10-ish or okay. so was when I think I first became aware and they broke into TV and said that, you know, white smoke is coming out of the smokestack above
Sistine Chapel.
So meaning that there was a pope elected today. There were two votes earlier in the morning, you know, Vatican time, and they did not elect, you know, there was no two-thirds majority vote. They took a lunch break, and when they came back from the lunch break, apparently it might have been the first vote back from the lunch break where they came up with the two-thirds majority vote.
Everyone felt better after eating a little something.
Well, they had a bit of time to just, you know, rally their forces and see what they could do. And so right now we're waiting for, you know, the appearance on the balcony of the senior deacon of the Vatican to come out and make the name, announce who the Pope is.
I have a question about the cardinals because you, the Catholic ones.
Catholic cardinals.
Catholic cardinals.
There might be some Catholic cardinals.
Yes.
Here.
Because you mentioned that 80% of them.
Right.
Of the voting.
Right.
Eligible cardinals were picked by Pope Francis. So, is there a finite number of cardinals, like the House of Representatives, and also what happened to the other cardinals? Did that many age out?
Yeah, there's 252 current cardinals who are alive. 133 are under age 80.
Okay.
So I what's the math? 120 are over age 80. So,
they still all come.
I mean, if you're able, I mean, a lot of those cardinals who are no longer able to vote still would come to the Vatican for this occasion, and they could be involved and just talk and try and build coalitions for the candidates who they like.
I guess, I mean, like, did that many cardinals die? Because if Pope Francis named that many cardinals, the number would be growing exponentially with each pope. Like, how did the number not, you do what I'm trying to say?
I know what you're saying.
Yes. I mean, that's a lot of cardinals to name. What if the next pope comes in and names 200 cardinals?
Well, okay, so the rules that the Vatican has is that there's a limit, but not all the rules are followed. There's a limit of 120 cardinal electors.
Okay.
Okay. I think when Pope Francis was elected, there were 115 electable cardinals or elector cardinals. So they didn't go over that amount. Pope Francis appointed a lot of cardinals and ended up at 133 that were eligible to vote. And I guess rules are made to be broken, so you can go over that amount. But in theory, it should be 120 is what they're trying to get to.
Okay.
But then again, you know, almost half of the other cardinals are over age 80. Take, for instance, former St. Louis Archbishop Justin Regali.
Mm-hmm.
He's aged out. He's 90 now.
Got it. Aged out.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of them have aged out.
What's really interesting, and you mentioned this pretty much right off the top, Fred, that they wanted to, that they try to elect an older pope so that he's not there for, you know, 50 years, that's entirely intentional, right?
I think it's a factor. I don't know if it's intentional, but a lot of people, I mean, if I'm looking at my list of possible successors, you know, some of these guys were too young 20 you know, 20 years ago. And now, like Antonio Tagle, Luis Antonio Tagle, the cardinal of the Philippines, his name came up to replace Pope Benedict, but they chose Pope Francis, but he was considered too young at that time.
The youngest elector is a Ukrainian Greek Catholic.
49?
45, I 45? Think. 1980, wow. He was born. 45.
The youngest pope ever to be elected was 18 years old.
In 1038?
Close. That was really close.
That's back when people died at 30?
Yeah, that was 955.
955!
So I think over-under, I'd have given you that
Thank
one.
Thank you.
The oldest popes, there are two oldest popes to be elected. They both had the same name, Celestine. They were elected at age 85.
There were people leading armies at 16 hundreds of years ago, you know?
Joan of Arc.
Everything happened a lot earlier. Now at 16, you can't do anything. Now I'm in my 40s. I can't do anything. We have religion editor and health editor Fred Bottomer with us here in studio. So I think what we're going to do here is we're going to take a break.
Okay.
We do have the Gas House Gang coming up. I think we might have to push it back. Is what I'm being told. We're going to push that back until we get an official announcement of who the Pope is. And we will break in with CBS coverage once that starts here on 104.1 FM. So stick here if you are wanting to know who the new Pope is. We're going to have it for you as soon as we know. Chris and Amy on KMOX.